your knights are in another castle. All your base are belong to us. It's dangerous to go alone. Listen to this. The Knights of the Game Table Podcast.
You are listening to the Knights of the Game Table Podcast, Episode 3, E3 2015. I am your host, Daniel, and on today's episode, we are going to be discussing E3. Joining me from the Temple of Geek is Amanda. How you doing?
Howdy, how's it going?
It's going fantastic. So, E3 2015.
Big stuff came out of there. Big stuff.
Quite an exciting year for gaming.
And it was about the games as well. I think the last couple of E3s that we've had, it's been about the platforms and the technology and not so much about the games themselves and what you can do, what you can play, the experiences you can have. And I think this year it was actually about the games, which is really what we're all there for.
Yeah, I mean, the systems are out. They're here. The software now, we need to see what's coming out. And, I mean, I think they hit it hard and fast this year. What were some of the big highlights, the big things that got you excited?
Well, I think we'll chop it up into the two systems. So with the Xbox, obviously Halo 5 Guardians, really excited about the player versus everything, the new multiplayer maps where they've actually got bosses, and they're named bosses as well. So they've put a lot of thought into the AI that you're going to be competing against as well as the other players. I like the concept that you're going to have special loadout cards that you can get so that when you kind of upgrade through the multiplayer, you are able to bring better weapons and gear into the game, better vehicles, and start with these sort of spawning activities as you go through the map. Now, it doesn't mean people are going to be super overpowered from the beginning, because as I understand, these sort of things unlock as you go through the match. But I think that definitely brings something, so it's not everybody running for the shotgun or everybody running for the sniper rifle. Everybody, as you get to a certain level, has the ability to bring those things into the game with them, which I think is going to be pretty exciting. So Halo 5, big one for me. Massive fan of the franchise. Gears of War 4, excited for that. Looking at some of the gameplay, though, it doesn't strike me as next-gen as much as some of the other titles did. The new game, ReCore, looks next-gen. Just some of the now, it was a CG trailer, so perhaps gameplay will be a bit different, but just some of the sand particle physics and things like that, that looks like they're making use of it. Gears of War 4, I don't know how much they will make use of it because they're kind of locked into an art style. And I was playing the beta for the Gears Ultimate Edition today, and the remaster didn't really strike me as, you know, a lot on top of the original. So Gears of War 4, excited to see more with the franchise. Love the story, but I think as far as graphics and like sheer power and on the platforms, I think it's something that almost could have been done on a 360. Definitely would look just as good on PC. So that's really kind of what I'm looking forward to, Xbox side. Halo and the new ReCore IP, bit of Gears of War 4. The rest of the titles didn't really do it for me.
The one that got me excited, Star Wars Battlefront. I know we've been seeing trailers and stuff of that, but they just showed more gameplay of it this time, and it was blown away. I'm like totally looking forward to that game. On the Nintendo front, I know there's not a lot of Nintendo lovers out there, but Super Mario Maker and Star Fox. Star Fox gameplay was amazing. I'm just looking forward to being able to control the R-Wing with the controller, the tablet controller, and the new vehicles that they have. It's a reimagining of the Star Fox series. It's not a sequel, it's not a prequel, it's just kind of a retelling of the Nintendo 64 version of the game, so it's going to be kind of exciting. But yeah, some of the other games like Halo and some of those other ones that you mentioned, I'm excited about as well. But those were the top three for me, I think.
Now, let's not skip Fallout 4. I think everybody's bloody excited about Fallout 4. I don't care what platform you play or whatever, because Bethesda is a powerhouse. But I think they did their thing kind of before E3, so when they got to E3, you had already seen it. I mean, the trailer came out, a week before then, and it was like a live kind of please stand by countdown thing, and it was all over YouTube. So as excited as you were, it wasn't so much in E3 as it could have been or would have been perhaps in previous years. PS4, obviously, everyone's excited about Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a Final Fantasy player. I'm not going to lie. I don't get it.
There's just something about hitting the X button repeatedly and watching your characters hit things. It's just, I don't know.
Mash X to win.
Nah, but the story of Final Fantasy VII, not my favorite of the Final Fantasy series, but the story is actually a really good story. The translation when it came out originally on PlayStation wasn't all that great, and I'm just looking forward to seeing a retelling of the game. They're going to, you know, redo the story. They're going to redo the translation. It's going to be new graphics. It's just an amazing game, and I'm expecting it to be even more amazing-er when it comes out. I know that's not a word, but...
It's a word now. It's a word now. And what was that title on PS4 with the kind of Scottish-inspired...
Is it The Last Guardian?
No, that's the one with the dog. I think that one's cute as well, the dog-winged bird thing. But that's been out. I mean, well, not out, but they've been talking about it for bloody ages. I remember this from maybe two E3s ago, seeing this winged dog character and the little Indian boy. Like, it looks cute. It looks precious. But the one I'm excited about is the cyber dinosaur with a bow and arrow.
Is that the Horizon Zero Dawn?
Maybe that's the one. I'm going to have to resort to
starring a cave woman with a sweet bow and an arrow who hunts animal machines.
Is that it?
Yes.
Yeah, it really, that looks ridiculous. I mean, I want to know their rationale for robo-dinosaurs. However, still very cool sounding IP. I mean, it looks beautiful, and it does make me kind of want to get a PS4. Hopefully it comes to PC so I can avoid the double cost. But I was excited about that. It does look like a good, you know, a new good franchise. Tomb Raider, not so much. All the football games and things like this isn't for me. But I know they have a big cult following of their own. Star Wars Battlefront that you mentioned, I was all for it, and the, like, massive chaotic combat looks so cool. But then they cheesed out, and that Luke Skywalker, like, animation looks ridiculous. I don't know if that's supposed to be Luke Skywalker, but his face is jacked up. It does not look right at all.
Well, have you seen Mark Hamill?
Okay, maybe. Maybe it's a reimagining.
South Park, the fractured butthole.
Oh, Lord. This is a thing, isn't it?
Have you played The Stick of Truth?
No, you know what? I think maybe 10 years ago I would have, but now...
Okay, go out and buy The Stick of Truth. It's $19.99. Play it on your Xbox 360, backwards compatibility, when they add it.
You know, but I think in Europe we've got the censor cards, so I would miss a good portion of it.
But
these
that's
days.
What makes it funny with the censor cards. Oh, my God, some of the videos I saw. But, yeah, I mean, the first game was amazing. The second game looks to be more of the same, so I'm really excited about that. And it's going to be a superhero spin. It's not the role-playing aspect, so I'm going to be kind of excited to see that. Kingdom Hearts 3. They still didn't give it an announcement of the release date, but they still showed some more. Again, it's an RPG. I don't know if you're into the Kingdom Hearts franchise. It's kind of like Final Fantasy. But that's another one that looks really good.
Yeah, I'm really, I think it's the kind of turn-based combat thing that I don't do very well. So, but I'm familiar with it. I think that's probably a game that I would pick up more so than Final Fantasy, just because Final Fantasy still has a lot of, like, the Japanese RPG elements, which isn't really my kind of cup of tea. I think I could get more behind, you know, Kingdom Hearts more so, mm-hmm. just for the nostalgia.
Yeah, the first two games were really good, and I've been waiting for the sequel. I mean, the third one's been in the works for, what, 12 years? So, ready for this game to finally come out. So, let's start with Microsoft's press conference. Let's just kind of highlight and talk about some of the top big things that came out of it. The big announcement for me was backwards compatibility. It's something that the Microsoft fans have been asking for since day one of the Xbox and never came out. They said they weren't going to do it. It was impossible. And then all of a sudden, out of left field, this was like not even expected. They were like, backwards compatibility is coming to Xbox One. I was like, holy crap. And, I mean, it's a little announcement, but it's just really exciting.
Yeah, no, it is exciting because it hasn't been that long since the consoles came out. So a lot of people still have their old catalog of games. They might not have gotten rid of the 360 yet, because there's not a whole lot of games on the Xbox One or the next-gen platforms in general. So backwards compatibility is a big thing. Now, a couple negative points that I know I put in an article up on Temple of Geek was your peripherals are not going to work because it's an emulator. So, like, my thing, when I saw it, I thought, Rock Band on next gen, yes. But here's the thing, it's an emulator, so it's not going to be able to port that kind of DLC. I don't think the peripherals are going to work with it, so it's not really for that sort of thing, I don't think. So not a big chance. However, Rock Band 4, I have heard some murmurs about this, so maybe that'll cover that, you know, that whole genre. The good thing is that
fix.
I know, and I need this in my life. That's why we still have a 360 in the house. But the only downside to it at the moment, it's only available if you have the preview membership, which I do, but I just spent all weekend going through my entire catalog of games, and not a single one that I still own is on the list of available games to do with the preview dashboard. I don't have an original copy of Mass Effect. I've got Mass Effect 2, for all the good that does me. You know, I don't have Viva Pinata, which is one of my, like, sad guilty pleasures. I don't have it anymore. I don't know where it went to. So that's the only downside, is I'm so desperate to try the technology. But unless I want to pay $11 or, you know, whatever to download some of these games again and rebuy them, or, you know, go through the bargain bin at my local game, the chances of me being able to try it for at least a couple more weeks until they add more games fairly soon.
Yeah, so, I mean, I lucked out. I have World of Keflings. I have Geometry Wars. I have Mass Effect. So I got, and I also have Toy Soldiers, which I've never played. It was one of those free games that Microsoft gave out. So I have a couple of the games, and I'm currently installing them so I can try it out and see how it looks. I heard it's almost like you don't even really notice any difference between playing it on the Xbox One from playing it on the Xbox 360. So I don't have anything to report yet, but as soon as I get them installed and play, I mean, I'll let you guys know.
Yeah, you'll have to do a stream to show everybody what it looks like. But so backwards compatibility was really cool. Another one of the things that they talked about only very briefly is early access for game titles, for especially like indie game development and alpha access of games, similar to what they do with like Steam Greenlight and Steam early access games. I think it's quite interesting coming to console, especially because it sounds like they might be bundling it with a refund policy out the gate, which basically means if you're not happy with it or you don't believe in the project, hopefully you'll be able to get some cash back, because this is very new to Steam, the concept of refunds in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite exciting, because a lot of people are kind of negative on the fact, but Microsoft takes a different approach than Valve does to their kind of community management and things like that, and what they allow on their consoles. So I think like it probably won't be plagued with as many poor like quality games as Steam Greenlight and Early Access does seem to get clogged down with. So I'm kind of interested to check that out. Hopefully it won't be exorbitantly priced. Sometimes like $20 for an Early Access title is a bit of a rip, especially if you don't know what the future of the game is going to be. So hopefully it'll be a little bit cheaper than that. You know, a fiver here or there is not a problem, but
yeah,
you know, if it gets too crazy.
Well, a fiver here and there does add up.
It does. I know. Crippling video game addiction.
Making it rain.
Making it rain.
So something else that came out of the Microsoft press conference was the Microsoft HoloLens with Minecraft. That was a mind-blown experience, just to see that appear on the table. What were your thoughts on that?
So I've actually been watching this for a while now, because they had a developer demo where they did like a full integrated room, and so you can see the guy in the environment, and it's projecting kind of icons for apps on the walls and, you know, game footage just in blank spaces and things like that, and it's a cool concept. Now, what I understand, it's going to cost more than a console, so we're thinking Google Glass levels of price here. So that's going to put it out of the reach of a lot of people. And kind of what happened with the Kinect, when it's not in the reach of a lot of people, there's no developer support for it. And when there's no developer support, it doesn't go anywhere. If you this E3 conference, I don't think Kinect was mentioned more than just to talk about voice commands.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary, considering that was a mandatory purchase with the console not even a year and a half ago. So the HoloLens, so cool, super futuristic. If it was 100 quid, 200 quid, I would buy it. But from the sounds of it, it's going to be $800 or more. So that's super cost prohibitive for what I think it'll actually be able to do and the support there'll be for it in the background.
Yeah. The one thing I think it does have going for it is it's being developed for Windows 10 as well. So it looks like it's going to be compatible with Xbox, but it is mainly going to be used for computing and PC type work and things. So there might be a niche for it, but only time's going to tell. I mean, like you said,
do the Iron Man thing if I had it. You know, I'd be like, bringing up schematics for things that have nothing to do with my life just so that I can move them around and throw them places.
Jarvis.
Exactly. Erase. Start over. I have very important work to do. I would probably use it for cooking, you know? Let's just be honest. You can see the recipe right there.
That would actually be kind of cool.
Very useful.
Watching Paula Deen while you're cooking.
Exactly. Need more butter.
So let's talk about PlayStation.
Okay. So I'm not a Microsoft fanboy, and I'm going to preface this by saying I've never owned a PlayStation. I know it's the better spec console. I realize I've lost in that war, but 10 years of paying money to Microsoft means that I bought an Xbox One. Simple as, right? However, seeing some of the things that are coming out for PlayStation that will have exclusive missions that you can only have on PlayStation, exclusive games that you can't even get on PC like Street Fighter, this sort of thing breaks my heart because I'm not somebody who wants to have 8 devices in my living room just so that I can have access to everything that's on the market. And I think the concept that 2 people can pay the same price for a game and yet they'll miss out on content because they chose a different console, that's rough. I've always had a problem with platform exclusives. I have no problems with first to platform. This is okay, right? Because they need to have a market edge, and I understand it. But the idea that you pay $60 to get Assassin's Creed and then you can't play all the missions if you don't have a PS4, that kind of hit hard. And when I was watching it and when I was hearing other people talk about it, this is kind of the thing that came out time and time again, is that it was, beta first and exclusive and first and exclusive and locked content and that sort of thing. So that, that kind of sours it for me a little bit, because you realize that perhaps you don't have the best of the 2 consoles spec-wise, but you're hoping at least you can play the same games, if not at 60 FPS all the time, but you can get the same content, you can have the same story. So that was my kind of number one criticism coming out of PlayStation 4. I think they do beautiful things. I think some of the games and IP coming out for, their side of the conferences was absolutely stunning, and what a mic drop moment with, Final Fantasy. I don't have to be a fan to understand that's a huge deal. But kind of the gate lock content, that is concerning. Mm-hmm. And also, all the publishers, 90% of the content that we saw was for old IP, remasters, remakes, the Rare game bundle coming out, which is super cool and super awesome. It's still 30 old games. The backwards compatibility, it's still old content. Gears Remaster, Final Fantasy Remaster. This is old content that they're serving up for a new platform. So I think they're kind of milking it a little bit.
Old is new again.
If we buy it, then we have only ourselves to blame.
Sony kind of pulled out they have their own version of the HoloLens called the Project Morpheus.
Yes, that came first, though. That's
correct.
2 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, I believe so. But they're starting to show more and more of it. I am afraid that's going to be kind of a similar situation. It's going to be a really expensive peripheral that no one's going to use.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing with the Oculus Rift plus Facebook plus Microsoft thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are people actually going to use this in their home? Let's just be realistic about the manner in which you would have to set up your gaming space for this to be realistic. Let's play, you know, you're playing Alien Isolation or whatever. You're going to throw the damn controller through the TV. It's going to be like it was with the Wii in the early days before they made you strap a harness onto your arm because you can't be trusted. Like, it's just not, maybe with the HoloLens, because you can see through it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only thing that makes it slightly more realistic. But all these ones where it's blacked out vision, if you're a single person home alone in a padded room, fine. You're not going to damage anything or anybody else. But if, you know, you're in a small sort of enclosed environment or even more sitting on the couch, it's going to be kind of hard to move yourself from reality when you're sitting on the couch. And no matter how cool it looks, you know you're still sitting on the couch. I don't know. It would kind of make me throw up, I think.
Yeah.
I want to be behind it. I really, really do. I just think that at the price point, it's going to be too much for anybody to take a gamble. And the people who can't afford it are going to get free copies anyway, you know, like they did with Google Glass and things like this. Mm-hmm. So
I'm kind of with you. I mean, I think the HoloLens has an advantage over these other ones because you can see through it. It's a piece of glass that covers your face. You can see through it. It adds to your environment. It's not a holographic or not the term I'm looking for. It's not a virtual reality experience. Mm-hmm. It's a holographic experience. So I think that's the main difference between the two is also probably what makes the HoloLens a little bit better than the Project Morpheus.
Yeah. But whatever happened to the Illuma room? Do you remember this?
No, I do not.
Yeah, no, God. How many E3s ago was this? They were talking about the Luma room, where I don't know.
Is that like the holodeck or whatever?
Very similar. Like, it's going to project things onto your room and, like, extend your display by projecting things onto the wall and, you know, make it a 360 environment. I haven't heard a bloody thing about this. And then we see the HoloLens come out. I think that's what happened to the Illuma Room idea, because this Illuma Room thing never happened. And now we have a holodeck, which is – or the HoloLens, which is kind of doing that same thing, except it's projecting it just for you instead of, I don't know, giving everyone in your house some sort of seizure.
Yeah, they probably thought that was – probably going to be a little bit more cost-effective for some people. Instead of building a whole new room on the side of the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Another announcement that they did during the press conference of during Sony's press conference was the announcement for the Kickstarter for Shenmue 3.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping you weren't going to bring that one up.
Why is that?
Okay, so first off, people who have tons of money have no business getting money from you or I for something that doesn't exist yet, all right? This is my problem with pre-orders and all kinds of things. Like, pre-orders, at least you're buying something that will exist.
Uh-huh.
Kickstarter, you're buying something in the hopes that enough people will also buy it and it will still exist. So I always get concerned when celebrities and other, you know, fairly well-off people need to go to the crowdfunding public for money. Now, the worst part is, no matter how much money anybody gives this project, it will never be enough to fund it. As I understand, Shenmue 2 was the most expensive video game of its time.
Well, as of right now, the pledge, they were asking for $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
It is currently at $3,449,545, so it is now funded.
Now, the question is, Shenmue 2, I think, was close to the 100 million mark. Sorry, 70 million.
70 million?
Yeah. So let's just think about the fact that we beat the Kickstarter goal, and that's cool, and that's fantastic, and that's great, but we're not going to give them $70 million. So Sony is going to have to spend that money as well. So what was the point of getting us to throw our beans in the barrel, except to show interest? And you can show interest in lots of ways.
Yeah.
They could have done an early access thing. They could have done, you know, betas, and that would have shown interest before they had to develop much. I mean, even doing some countdown like Fallout 4, I mean, how many hits on YouTube do the live streams of these countdowns get you know, people know it's wanted. So I think it was good that it was at E3. I think it's cool use of the platform to show how many people are interested in the project. However, there's no amount of money. I mean, they're not going to raise $70 million. They're not, and that's how much Shenmue 2 costs, from what I can tell. And this is going to be even more. You're going to be looking at close to the $100 million mark if they want to make it proper for next gen. So, yeah, I'm a bit skeptical of that. It was definitely a publicity stunt, and that's fine. But
it worked.
It did work. It did work.
With 27 days to go, which is sad, because that means that thing's probably going to rake up some more money.
Yeah, yeah, it will. I mean, hopefully it won't get stuck in development hell like a lot of things do. Because you could imagine if you donate a decent amount of money and then you don't see a game for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years.
Ooh. Yeah.
Half-Life 3 confirmed.
It will come out one day.
I know, and everyone's going to be like, the Illuminati. Oh, man. So, other things that we didn't talk about. So EA and their early access subscription model stroke free week thing. What did we think about that?
I didn't try it.
Really?
I looked at it. I saw that there was a bunch of sports games on there. I didn't pay attention to what other games were on there. And I was like, eh, I didn't try it.
I think I played Garden Warfare for the last, I don't know, 48 hours.
How is that game?
Oh, man, it's bloody great. The only downside is it is super repetitive, I'm not going to lie. And it's kind of like a, you know, Pokemon gotta catch 'em all kind of card opening blind bag kind of element in there. So you're running these kind of endless wave missions to collect coins to buy blind bags full of cards that unlock things in the game. And earlier today I decided that that was too much of a time investment for something that only runs to the 22nd. But it was really fun. They had a couple good titles on there, like the sports games. I've already said I'm not a big fan of these, but there was, you know, legitimately good titles. There was Battlefield 4, which I did download, and I'm going to play some more tomorrow and Monday. So far, for what I played Battlefield 4, and I've never played it before, simply because it's on my list of things to rent, and I haven't gotten it yet. Absolutely stunning, kind of immersive. I felt like I was leading a squadron of guys. That felt super cool. The driving in it is bloody awful, and I've only played like the first couple of missions, but the driving in it made me want to you know, like, oh my god.
Because I needed to download that so we could play it.
Yeah, it's really good. You know what? Side point. What is the problem with split screen these days? Why does nobody support split screen? Does no one have friends anymore?
No, that's what happened with online gaming. People don't need to have human contact anymore.
Because you can't do. I get it. I don't understand why you can't do things online gaming in the same room. This drives me crazy. Like, because I already have, there's already 4 consoles in my house. Like, if we all wanted to play, there's not enough bandwidth for all of us, first off. Mm-hmm. So split screen is so much better, especially when you don't, you know, when you want to go online and you don't mind sacrificing a little TV space to do it so that you can smack the other person when they draw aggro.
Well, know? Especially when you have, like, a 60-inch television. I mean, you can... get 2 30-inch televisions out of it. You're okay.
Exactly.
It's almost pointless to buy a second controller nowadays because there's no point in having a second controller because there's really not that many multiplayer games that you could play with 2 people in the same room.
Because, I mean, all the games that I played this weekend, I've played the beta for Gears of War, you know, that just had the multiplayer, so there was no split screen whatsoever, because you can't even split screen multiplayer. It's not like Halo where you can do that. Then I played Battlefield. There's no co-op in that, so that sucked. The only thing that had co-op was Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. You know, it's kind of a shame, especially when you're taking up the family entertainment system, which the Xbox is supposed to be the center of the living room. Mm-hmm. If you're taking up that spot all day, like I might have done last week playing The Witcher 3, you know, other people kind of want in on that sort of action. I'm not really seeing it. And it's a shame. It's a shame. I think we miss something, you know, not being able to play next to each other.
Yeah, you lose a lot with the multiplayer. Not only that, like when you're trying to chat and stuff on the headsets, some of the sound quality sucks. It's not like someone's sitting next to you.
These new wired headsets, they're rubbish. Why did they not? I mean, what was wrong with the one-ear wireless headset that was with the Xbox 360? Why did they not do that again? That thing was great. This is another problem why I think it's sad peripherals won't work with backwards compatibility. I would plug that thing in a heartbeat.
But the EA thing, that's going to be a subscription service that you pay monthly for, and you'll be able to have access to their libraries of titles, correct?
Yeah, and as I understand, it's going to be like early access, and then you get it for a certain amount of time with the money that you pay. And then after that, you can buy the game at a slight discount. Now, it's not an exorbitant amount for the monthly fee, so I think there is some benefit to it on paper. In reality, it's not something I'm going to buy because EA is the worst at money grabbing, and this is kind of sad from even them. Like, a beta is supposed to get you excited to purchase the game. Same thing with demos. This should not be kind of, you know, subscription locked behind a wall just because they chose EA as a publisher distributor. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that they're taking titles like Dragon Age Inquisition and putting it behind this wall means that future iterations, like, this sounds great for current, you know, Dragon Age Inquisition, but let's say they do a Dragon Age Inquisition 2 or whatever the next one in the series is, the concept that somebody else will be able to access that and play it before I can play it and I've pre-ordered it, that I think is the part that bothers me in my head somewhere. Because it kind of unlevels the playing field yet again. So there's just so many levels. I'm trying to remember, it's like that game Evolve, trying to remember what you're getting for paying certain amounts of money and who gets what and where it goes. Mm-hmm. It's starting to get really confusing. Where do you go to get the full experience from the soonest possible date? And how much money do you have to throw at it? Do you have to throw money at EA first plus pre-order? Like, what actually happens there? It's kind of confusing, and I think it's going to get more so. So in principle, I wouldn't support it, and I probably wouldn't buy the subscription. But having played the free days, I think there is value, and it's not poor value for money. I just don't think I would do it long term. I'll take all the free days they want to give me, though.
So this wasn't really part of – I mean, it was the beginning of E3, but it happened on Sunday. Did you happen to watch the Nintendo World Championship?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, missed an awesome.
I heard about the puppets. Are you going to tell me about the puppets?
No, it has nothing to do with the puppets. The World Championship was the competition from 16 people down to the winner of the tournament, and they played games from Splatoon to Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, which was really intense. I don't know if you ever played Mario Kart, but Mario Kart at 200cc is intense, and those guys were, like, incredible to watch. I was like, holy crap. And then the last part of the competition was Mario Maker. And some of those stages that they created in Mario Maker were flat-out crazy. If you ever get a chance, look up the video on YouTube and just watch the video. It's just amazing. And watching those guys figure out how to beat those stages. But, yeah, that was a really cool highlight for me. I hope they do that again next year. I was glad to see that they brought the Nintendo World Championship back. So it was just kind of cool for me. Kind of nostalgia.
No, it's good. I think esports are kind of getting more popular, and I don't know if it has anything to do with the prevalence of Let's Plays, but I think there's more of a market for people wanting to passively watch and consume gaming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really cool that, you know, they did the Nintendo Championships. I haven't owned a Nintendo in 12 years now, so I'm kind of out of it, but I do see the excitement. I've watched people play Super Smash Brothers, and it's hilarious. So, you know, I can see why people would be interested in it. And Mario Maker, from what I understand of the technology, is quite cool. It's kind of like Mario meets a Minecraft level designer sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's quite neat. Yeah, I'm all for it. I just think Nintendo's always a little bit late to the party for just in general, their whole business model.
Yeah. We'll see what happens next year with them when they announce the new NX system. So,
Are people actually going to know that it's a new system, not like the Wii U?
I don't know. We'll see. They didn't make any announcement. All they said was, we'll talk about it more next year.
Well, if they keep churning out Marios and Pokemons and these sort of things, they've got a business model for the rest of their life. That's the sad part.
And those Amiibos, man, those are flying off the shelves.
you know this new Squidoo? What is it?
Splatoon.
Yeah. That theme song. I'm a kid. I'm a squid. I'm a kid. I'm a squid. That gets stuck in your head, man. That is rough. I feel like I would find painting in a corner on my own, kind of cathartic. I don't think I would need to do the multiplayer.
Filling the textures of the wall.
Yeah. Amiibo, yeah. I think Amiibo is a pretty cool idea as well. It's just that it seems to be managed really poorly. The idea that, you know, with a lot of things, you cannot get it unless you go to Amazon and there has to be specific hours when they're selling specific, you know, packs.
Mm-hmm.
It just reminds me of the Beanie Babies, the, you know, just this kind of crazy consumerist kind of mental problem that we all sometimes get once a decade. It's happened with Amiibo.
If you had to choose one thing from E3, what was your favorite thing so far this year?
That's hard. I like a lot of things. You know, I'm going to have to go with backwards compatibility. I mean, it's an easy win. They did it on software, which is really smart. And I think it's gonna make a lot of people feel more comfortable switching to Xbox One if they know that they can still play a good portion of their favorite titles.
I hate you because you stole mine.
But it's the easiest win, you know, and that's the reality. And I think when people say that Sony won E3 this year because of Final Fantasy, I would argue that backwards compatibility in the long run has more impact and more value to more people, simply because overall it opens the market where previously you weren't able to play those games. So that means that, you know, people will be able to switch to the Xbox One, and retailers are still going to make money doing trade-ins for 360 games. There's still going to be a market to buy those games. Yep. Still going to be a market to digitally download them. And there's going to be a market for the new 1 terabyte hard drive because, let's just be real, I'm already at 78% space and I only have like 13 games on my hard drive.
Yeah,
so
the Xbox One games are just incredibly large.
So, yeah, if you put your whole catalog of 360 games, which at some point the majority of them will be available because it costs the developers nothing really to make it available,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's going to clog up the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, if I had to choose one, I would probably say Battlefield. Just watching the gameplay of it and just the immersive battles and things like that, just it got me pumped, and I can't wait for November to get here fast enough.
Yeah, I really like the Star Wars game until they brought out Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker.
Get past that.
No, it was so cheesy. Oh, God, why?
It was just a small little clip. I mean...
But the sounds in the game, they yes. are straight up legit right there. Like the at-ats, the pew, pew, pew. Oh, man, that's fantastic. I just need to hook up the 7-point right now.
And then when I get it, I'll just be playing it straight until the movie comes out. So.
Oh, man. So other than the E3 games that we've talked about, what did you feel about some of the games that we've seen for a while, like The Division or Divided? Which one is it? Divided? Division?
The Division, the,
Tom Clancy one. Yeah.
Yeah. So I watched that that playthrough they did where they did that, where they snuck into, I forgot what it was, the zone or whatever, and then they turned on the other players. That was actually kind of a cool concept that you can play like that. And, yeah, I mean, that's actually a game I would probably be willing to purchase and play through. I think it looks pretty exciting.
What about the blind game, the little blind girl? Did you see that?
I don't remember that one.
Xbox. It's like a watercolor kind of art style, and the girl is sensing the world with her other senses besides sight, so you're kind of seeing the heartbeats and sound movements of things in the environment,
mm-hmm.
and she kind of has, I guess, a mild form of agoraphobia. She's never really went outside, and I guess she follows a cat kind of out into the wider world and experiences kind of what the rest of the world is like outside of her garden, which is safe and all sorts of things. I think that's quite a cool game. It depends on the price point, because this is another problem that we have with consoles where everything is like $30 to $60, and you're not going to get below that.
Yeah.
I think for an experience like that, I that you know you're not certain you're going to enjoy. You buy an RPG, you know it's going to be fun if you like RPGs. You buy an FPS, you know it's going to be fun if you like FPS. This game, you don't really know what it is. So spending that kind of cash, I probably would rent it first. Boomerang the thing first, and then...
Unless it's a marketplace arcade game and it's like $15, then, you know, you can shell out $15 and...
Yeah. But it definitely looks interesting. I'm trying to think of some of the other games that I thought... Oh, Destiny.
So, I play Destiny.
Yeah.
I have the expansion packs.
Oh, my God.
I was trying to get you to play it. So, there's another expansion pack coming out, it looks like.
God.
Which gets me kind of excited. That's one thing I really enjoyed like about PC gaming was you can buy a game... And you can continue playing that game for many years because they kept releasing expansion packs for it.
Yeah.
So the concept of I own a game that I paid $60 for and I'll pay $10 maybe once a year or twice a year or whatever for an expansion pack doesn't bother me, and it excites me about gaming. So the fact that they're keeping that game alive with expansion packs and they didn't just stop with the second one is exciting to me that they're going on. And I believe they're going to be introducing a new class of character. So... Yeah, I'm excited. I don't know what your hatred is against that game.
You know what? I bloody love it until I realized that I couldn't play raids unless I knew real people who played raids. So that was difficult. B, you're just one. Don't you need like six or eight? It's £20 a pop over here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's significantly more than $20.
That's true.
So thinking about for this money, I could almost have a brand new game instead of six extra missions and an extra raid or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what was difficult for me. If there was more content, if it was like World of Warcraft expansion level content, like that level of content, sure. The fact that I think it's about a third of that or a sixth of that, you know, like six missions and maybe a couple of heroic things. I don't know. It's not enough for me. I think they have a good model for the console. It's definitely the PC model. I can definitely get behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But because the ability to work with the platform that they built, you know, they may be better doing a Destiny 2 after a while than constantly bolting things on to Destiny.
And I'm sure they're going to, because they got to make that money. Oh, so what did you think about the Microsoft Elite controller?
Oh, that is a cool piece of kit. That is a drool piece of kit. Look, not only can you change out all the buttons, which is super exciting, but for the price, I think if you only need one controller in your house, and we already established they don't do split screen stuff really anymore. Okay, so you can rationalize not having to buy four or five or six controllers. You can make an investment of one proper gaming controller.
So for the price of 2.5 games.
Well, look, here's the thing. You go from Halo to Mass Effect to Gears of War, and all the buttons are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to relearn in your brain how to control everything. Now, if you could bind all of the keys to exactly what you always wanted to be, it'd be very much like PC gaming, where you use WASD, and that's that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can, every MMORPG that I've ever played, I bind all of the stuff to the same buttons as close as humanly possible so that all of that memory, muscle memory, that I've been building for years and years and years has value from go. The difference with every single game out there is that if you haven't played it in a while or it's a brand new piece of IP, you spend the first, you know, 3 or 4 hours just trying to remember what the darn buttons do. So if you could flip a switch, go to an FPS loadout, go to an RPG loadout, and carry that through your games. As I understand, they're going to be able to do with a standalone app
mm-hmm.
to allow you to, you know, bind and just have that be what it is. I think that has value. Plus the extra buttons, because some games have ridiculous button loadout. Like, when you are switching in Dragon Age, trying to do potions and call your damn horse and all these things, if you could call your horse just by flipping a paddle at the back, this would, I would have used the horse more, you know? It's almost not worth it. Like, same thing with The Witcher, when you need to smash the whistle 8 or 9 times until it finally brings your horse over to you. Like, I have a problem with horses. But if I could just do a button paddle, that would be so much easier, and I would probably use the feature more. Same thing, quick binding potions or things like that. I think that's super helpful, especially in very complex games where you're using lots of keystrokes, like Neverwinter. There are, like, tons of different simultaneous button pushes, which is crazy. Also, B to jump. Well, it's like up D pad or something.
You have to hold down one of the triggers. And
it's crazy. Why? Yeah. So I think 150 quid sounds like a lot. But if you remember that back in the day, we used to have a minimum of 4 controllers, right? And those were all 35, 40 quid each. And now, for the most part, you just need 1 controller. And let's be fair, if you own this controller, you're not letting anybody else use it.
That is
so
true.
You know,
it would be encased in a glass case with a padlock and
exactly
biometrics so no one can get into it.
So even though I think it's expensive, I think they will drop the price on it. And I think that just for the key binding alone, it's probably, you know, it's probably worth it. Especially because we've got another, 8 years with these consoles? You might as well.
Well, my fear is it has interchangeable parts. So it's going to come with 3 different size sticks, analog sticks. And supposedly you're going to be able to replace buttons and stuff. My fear is they're going to start releasing other parts for it, and then when you want to get those other parts, they're going to cost more and more money. So you're raking, you know, initial cost of $150, then $20 for some new buttons. They didn't show what the D-pads look like, so there's multiple D-pads. If you want to get a fighting D-pad, that's going to cost you another $15, you know, things like that. So I'm afraid that that $150 controller may go up to be $200, $300 after you get all the parts for it. That's
maybe just wait and buy one used? I don't know. Because I'm just thinking about, yeah, you could buy all the parts and things like that. But if you start off and you look at it, I'm going to get these for the extra buttons at the back, which, let's just be real, if you're trying to go up against somebody who has the extra buttons and you don't.
Yeah, you're going to lose every time.
You're going to lose. Like, you will. Simple as, because there's always something that you need that you cannot access as easily as somebody who's just going to have those flipper pads in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I got my first Razor Crate gaming mice, when I was kind of doing PvP and stuff in City, like, it made such a huge difference to be able to bind things and have just a few extra buttons. Like, it makes a huge difference for running macros and things like that. So, you know, to have potions equipped or to be able to do a quick change between, you know, loadouts, that's going to make a massive difference, especially if you play characters differently depending which side you're on. You know, especially in games where it's not identical kind of loadouts. So, like, Garden Warfare is a great example of something where the characters have completely different loadouts, and I find that if I'm playing as the Sunflower Healy character, I don't necessarily like the heal button to be the left bumper, because I mash it constantly. And so I would like it to be something on the D-pad, because I think that would just be easier for me. So being able to switch between loadouts and things like that, or doing it on a bumper or flipper, I think that might be better. Yes, it's going to end up being more expensive if you want all the extra loadouts. But the concept, I don't know, maybe I don't knock it till you try it, but the concept of having one stick larger than the other, taller, is kind of strange to me. I don't know how that would feel in the hand, now that I'm so used to the way the controllers feel now.
Trying to remember what they said about the stick. I think the longer the stick, it's also supposed to be more of a response time or whatever for more finer movements.
Oh, yeah. No, and also with the triggers, this is another thing that's going to, if you do not have this controller, because they can put it onto the rapid fire and it basically bottoms out real quick and gives you a bit of a spring back. So if you're using something with like a 3 fire burst or a 1, you know, one shot, one trigger pull kind of deal. The ability for it to go a third to do the same fire shot as it would take to do a full trigger pull. Like, this is just reaction time in mass here. Like, you're going to get owned. That's another thing. If you don't have it and you're already not that great of a player, you're going to get owned.
Yeah, like every time I play Call of Duty and I get splatted within the first 10 seconds of getting out in the battlefield.
Oh, like when I played Gears of War all day today and just got completely murdered. I did not win a single round. In fact, I don't think I killed anybody. I just got headshotted from across the map. Yeah, their spawning points are directly across from each other or something. You know, you go around a corner and you're just dead. just, you know, that was my experience. I'm not very good at this. I'm not very good at competitive multiplayer outside of Halo. Halo, for some reason. I think maybe it's just practice.
She was like, I was the bomb.
Well, I could at least survive without getting headshotted every 5 seconds.
Well, do you have any final thoughts on E3 this year?
I think now the next gen is completely rooted. We know what it is. It's not going anywhere, so it's kind of like a pick-a-side thing. They focus more on the games. Yeah. Current gen. I know. When am I going to stop saying next gen? Because it's current gen. I think now they can focus more on the games. I think my criticism is always going to be when, for the same amount of money, you don't get the same experience. So this is the thing with the EA Access versus pre-orders, the thing with the gated missions for PlayStation 4 versus just first on PlayStation 4 or something like that. So that's my overall criticism of the way it seems like things are going. The new games that they showed, I mean, some massive titles. We didn't even talk about Mass Effect 4. We barely touched on Fallout 4. These are games that people want and need in their lives. Gears 4. Actually, a lot of 4s this year. And Halo 5. Although, you know, some would argue that it could be considered Halo 4 if you bump a couple of the crappy ones off. ODST, what was that? So I think there were some really good games, and I think that's what the focus on. From a software platform perspective, I think that Microsoft won with the new controller, with the backwards compatibility, with the Steam-esque green light, early access-esque sort of features. They just did more as a platform to sell their platform. However, balance that with Final Fantasy, which has a massive cult following, and this is like, it was so hush-hush, and it was just stunning. Everybody was so shocked. That is a more exciting gaming moment, I think. So I think PS4 won for gaming moments, and, you know, as much as I don't like it, gated content, I mean, they are going to win on that. But I would caution people, if you were on the flip side and the same thing was happening to you on PS4 as what's happening to us over on Xbox, you probably wouldn't be so super excited about it, and I think that's why it's not so good for the industry. Mm-hmm. But from a platform perspective, I don't feel like Sony did as much to sell the PS4 other than to gate off content and to have Final Fantasy.
Yeah, Street Fighter is the sorest spot with me. when I heard that last year, I was like, I guess it was this year. I was like, are you kidding me? But whatever.
I know. It's rough. And Nintendo, I think they're doing some great things. I mean, Splatoon, from what I have seen of this game, absolutely stunning. Some of the best original IP to come out of them in as long as I can remember. I don't remember the last time that they did something great that did not have Mario or, you know, Pokemon or Zelda in the game. It's going to be a good year for games, and I think that's what makes E3 so exciting. The only downside is, how the heck are we all going to afford all these games? Because they're all coming out, like, the same time.
Just start selling your, you know, selling your stuff.
Sell your Xbox 360, because now you can
take out a second mortgage on your house, things like that.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Knights of the Game Table podcast. I want to thank Amanda for joining me on this episode's discussion. Stay tuned to thetempleofgeek.com for the next all-new episode. And as always, thanks for listening.
Please follow us on Twitter at Temple of Geek. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Temple of Geek. And remember to visit thetempleofgeek.com, your one stop for all things geek. Congratulations. This story is a happy ending. Thank you.